Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Okay, my name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. This is a continuation of the step series. We're on step 11. I'm going to actually talk about step 11, except possibly from a different angle than you're used to hearing about it. I want to talk about application. And I want to talk to, what I really want to speak to is something called fear. I want to talk about how my life has been changed because of step 11 as far as a problem that alcoholics have with fear. So I'm going to read a few things from the big book, and it's an interesting thing. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981, so I've been sober a little over 32 years. 32 years of living life and dealing with the stuff we deal with on an everyday basis that I know you deal with, but not drinking over it. And sometimes it wasn't pretty, you know? You know, they say there's three things that human beings should never witness: how sausages are made, how laws are made, and how people stay sober. It's not pretty, you know. It's not graceful at all, you know. A lot of, you know, I initially came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I joined the Fellowship of the Thumb-Sucking Crybabies. I didn't quite make it into the Fellowship of the Spirit. I was in that other fellowship where, you know, every day, every hour, every set, you know, you're up, you're down, you're up, you're down, you're up, you're down. That's the first hour. And, you know, the thumb-sucking crybabies, you know, every meeting was, there was a crisis. Let's see what the deal is. Has anybody here ever, been worried about anything? Okay, so, have you ever had a situation where you're worried about something, and it has to do with a person? And you can't stop thinking about that person? Have you ever had a situation where you want to stop thinking about the person, but you can't stop thinking about the person?
Yeah.
You ever have a problem with money? Maybe ever have financial problems? You ever have a financial problem with money where you're worried about something as far as money is concerned? Maybe losing your house, maybe losing your car, maybe not having enough money, you know, maybe lights turned on, maybe something like that, and you can't stop thinking about the money problem? Anybody ever have that? Am I the only one? You ever have a situation where you know thinking about it isn't going to solve it, and you can't get to sleep, and you want to stop thinking about it, but even though you want to stop thinking about that, you can't stop thinking about it? You ever have that?
Mm-hmm.
You ever have a situation where the worry and the fear about something drags on maybe for more than a day?
Mm-hmm.
2 days, 3 days, a week, maybe a month, you know? And it keeps on coming back, and you can't get rid of it? Like drinking, you know? Like sometimes... Yeah, anybody, we've got some alcoholics here, so, you remember when you couldn't stop drinking? No, we've recovered from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, but we're not drinking one day. You're not drinking, that's an amazing thing, isn't it? Does anybody here, you know, I was an alcoholic where I couldn't stop drinking, I was drinking against my will. You understand what I'm saying? Like I'd wake up and I'd say I'm not gonna drink today, and I'd mean it, and then by 5 o'clock I'd be drunk. You ever do that deal? I did it over and over again. That's a horrible situation, isn't it? Would you agree with me that that's got to be the worst deal? The worst deal has got to be when you want to stop drinking or drugging, I know, or whatever, you really want to, and you can't. So you ever think in your mind, you know, like if you're an alcoholic addict, what's the use? You're never going to stop. Like your life is over. You're never going to stop. And you believe that, right? Because there's nothing that can remove that. And, now you're in AA, you're in NA, you're in whatever A you're in, you know what I mean? And now you don't drink. You don't drink. Do you remember the first, day that it dawned upon you that you lost the obsession of drinking? I mean, not only that you weren't drinking, or you weren't drugging, but you weren't even thinking about drinking or drugging. Drinking and drugging doesn't even come into the equation. You remember that day?
Yeah.
I was like, it's like amazing, isn't it? Wasn't that like a miracle? It's like being high. You're like high. You know what I mean? You can't believe it. That'll last like for a week or two or three or so, you know? And it's an exciting deal, right? I mean, you feel blessed, right? But over a period of years and years and years, no matter how well you work the program, even though you're grateful, that initial excitement, that high over realizing that this thing's been lifting from you, it's you sort of, in a sense, sort of take it for granted. You don't, you know, I mean, I've sponsored a lot of guys, and you know, I'll talk about it, just, I'm not even thinking about drinking. It's like, what are you talking about, you know? You know, you sort of like take it for granted, you know, so. But then what happens if you're an alcoholic like me, is then you get into the other part of the deal. You get into the real alcoholism, right? Because you get rid of the symptom, the drinking, but then you start reading stuff, you figure, why, you're going to these meetings, and it sort of starts dawning upon you that even after people stop drinking, they're still going to the meetings. You know, when you first come in here, it's kind of confusing. Everything they talk about in here is sort of like counterintuitive. They've got their own jargon. It's like, well, I had to turn it over. Whatever, turned it over. I've never turned anything over in my life. I got to grapple with it and control it, you know. And you know, they're talking about turning it over and praying and all this sort of stuff. It takes like weeks and months to sort of get down that jargon and try to figure out what they're talking about. It letting go of resentments, letting go of them. What do you mean? I like feast on them, you know. And you know, getting ready. I mean, the stuff they talk about that they want you to do in here really makes no. When you first come in, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. You know, it's almost like. Before you stop drinking, if I came up to you when you were in that state, that incredible state where you couldn't stop drinking, if I came up to you and I said, why don't you just stop? You'd like slap me. You'd say, what, are you crazy? Are you crazy? Because it's like you're like living in a different reality. You're living in the reality that you can't stop. So you come in here. And after you stop the drinking, you read somewhere, some of the book, you read this stuff, you know, but it may not actually make any sense. It takes a long time to sort of really connect the dots. Because you really have to not only read it in the book and hear it from the podium, but you really sort of have to experience it. Now, look, I was drinking for many, many years, 10 or 15 years. I wrecked a marriage. I hurt a lot of people. I lost my self-esteem. I wrecked a lot of stuff, you know, just like you guys did. And then finally, when my whole life exploded around me, I came to the conclusion that I might have a drinking problem. In other words, we don't figure these things out quickly. Can I get an agreement on that? I know we're brilliant. I know alcoholics, I know we're smarter than, I know that alcoholics are much smarter than the general population, but would you agree with me that we don't figure out a lot of stuff quickly? You know, we do like stuff over and over again. You know, what's that thing? You do things over, the height of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. We do that, don't we? You know what I mean? We do that. So what'd you take? How long did it take you to figure out that you might have a drinking problem? 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, you know, whatever. So, you know, here's the deal. So you come in here, and what they tell you is, that a drinking is but a symptom of the problem. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's a symptom. It's not even the problem. That the problem centers in your mind, not your body. And get this. They didn't even tell you what the problem is. They just tell you that the drinking that you thought was the problem ain't the problem. But the real problem centers in your mind. But you don't even know what the problem is. Until one day, you start thinking about something that happened to you, or is going to happen to you, or happened to you in the past, or is happening to you now, and you're sober as I am right now, and you can't go to sleep, and it's driving you crazy, and you're calling up your sponsor, and you can't get rid of it. And all of a sudden, you find yourself in a situation where your life is crap, and you feel like crap, and you're not going to drink. You feel like drinking, but you're not going to drink. You know what I mean? But your life is destroyed because of this one thing that hasn't even happened, but you can't stop thinking about it, and you want to stop thinking about it, but you can't stop thinking about it. And, you don't even realize that it's a problem. I mean, because you're so used to thinking crap about yourself and other people, you're so used to being scared. You see, our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. It says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontented, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. We drink because of this incredible anxiety and fear and worry we have, but we don't know that we have incredible worry, anxiety, and fear because that's just the way we are. So you don't say, gee, I'm incredibly worried, anxious, and fear. You just say, I'm very depressed, sort of like, well, that's just the way I am. You know, you don't even think that there's a possibility. Just like when somebody would say to you, well, why don't you stop drinking? He said, what, are you crazy? Well, why don't you stop being depressed? What, are you crazy? You don't understand. I am depressed. I am filled with, this is me. This is my, I told my sponsor, I said, you don't understand. That's just my personality. He says, it's your personality that's killing you. So you see, what happens is you start thinking that you're crazy, insane, sick thinking. Is not crazy, insane, sick thinking. It's just you. That it'll never be cured. It's just like, you remember when we started thinking about alcohol, you say, well, I'm never going to be, I can't envision a life without drinking. I can't envision a life what's the use? I mean, you know, somebody says, why don't you be like your brother Gary? Well, how the hell do I do that? You know, I mean, this is the way I am. You can't envision a life without drinking. Now listen to me, you can't envision a life without drinking. You could never envision a life without drinking. One day, you're not drinking and you're not even thinking about it. Wow. And that's not even the problem. That's just the symptom and it's like that. So now you're 3 months sober, you're 6 months sober, you're 5 years sober, and you can't get rid of this incredible worry that you have every day about the job. You can't get rid of this incredible worry you have every day about the IRS. You can't get rid of this incredible worry you have about the country, about Afghanistan, about what's on the news, about your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your husband, your wife, your children, whatever it is, all mished in together. You know what I mean? And you're depressed and you're going crazy, but you know, because that's just you. You can't get, and somebody says to you, he says, well, stop thinking that way. And you say, what are you crazy? What are you crazy? Because you know you'll never stop thinking this way because this is the way you've always been. You've never not been able to do anything but think that way. You've never been able to do anything but feel that way. And you can run to meetings and get a temporary reprieve because, you know, I listen to that Russell guy, and, you know, 10 minutes into the meeting, I stop thinking about that other problem, and I start listening to him, and he's kind of funny and everything like that. And then you get in your car, and you drive away, and it's back to the rodeo again. You know, what am I going to do about my husband? What am I going to do about my wife? What am I going to do about the money? What am I going to do about the job? What am I going to do? It's back to the insane, crazy thinking. And sure, it's great not to drink, and it's nice to have friends, and it's good to have a sponsor, so you pick up the phone and say, I'm going crazy, you know what I mean? And then he can talk to you for about 10 minutes. He can talk you off the roof, you know what I mean? He can talk you down. Put down the gun. Take it out of your mouth. It's not that bad. It's going to be able to see. You can take the gun out of your mouth one day at a time. You know what I mean? That's the way we do it. We say, don't commit suicide one day at a time. Don't kill yourself. And you sort of make it. And every once in a while, somebody asks you, you got 10 or 15 years, how you doing? And you go, hanging in there. Because if you're an alcoholic, you're never going to stop drinking. Okay, you stop drinking, but you're certainly never going to stop thinking. You're never going to stop being full of fear. Right? So how would you like to stop that? How would you like to stop that? Would you like to get rid of that? That'd be a pretty cool deal, wouldn't it? You know, if you could, you know, I was 15 years and I had that. 15 years sober, going to meetings, doing this, and I had that deal. You know, I was 20 years, and I had that deal. I'm not saying this to depress you. I'm just talking about my testimony. And it really shouldn't depress you, because if you got 15 years and you still got that deal going, at least there's hope. Hope is important. You know, I think the real good stuff is reserved for those that persevere. You know, if it wasn't for people in here, like the Al Kennedys and the Joe Snyders and the Ray O'Keefes and the old-timers in here that had 25, 30 years, I wouldn't have believed that you could actually matriculate, that you could graduate, that you could change in that area, the area of thinking and fear. I would have actually believed at 9 years, at 10 years, at 15 years, this is never going to be a change. It's always going to be, you know, like the gal on Saturday Night Live. It's always something. You know what I mean? There's always something raining on your parade, screwing you up, something you got to worry about. Like, life is just such a trudge, such a problem people, problem areas, and that's the way it was. You know what I mean? But I hung in there. And I've been relieved of that hopeless state of mind. I've been relieved of that. I don't got that anymore. You know, you gotta break through. You know, when they have this gravitational pull, you know what I mean? Where you gotta, to break Earth's orbit, you gotta go at a velocity. Otherwise you get pulled back. Gravity sort of pulls you back to Earth. You gotta break that gravitational pull. So that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the promises, the permanent promises. I want to talk about what they're really talking about in the book. I want to talk about being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. I want to talk about experiencing much of heaven. I want to talk about a new freedom. You know, what do they say? We're going to have a new freedom? A new, what's the other thing? A new happiness. I want to talk about the new happiness. I'm not talking about the happiness you have when you're in a meeting and you feel good, but then you walk out and then it's gone. I'm not talking about the temporary sort of like happiness that you get at meetings, sort of like the happiness you got when you took your first couple of drinks. I'm talking about permanent happiness. Permanent release from fear. I want to talk about what they talk about in the big, I want to talk about losing fear of people. I want to talk about losing fear of economic insecurity. I don't want to talk about like temporarily losing it or, you know, once in a while losing it. I want to talk about living a life where you're not scared. You're not scared of running into anybody. You're not scared of what people think about you. You're not scared of who you are. You're not thinking about yourself all the time. You're not taking things personally. As a matter of fact, I want to talk about a life where you're not thinking much at all, which is really what they're talking about in the big book. You know, is that okay with you? Can I talk about that stuff? I don't talk about it a lot because most people don't identify with it. You know, they just identify with, I want to kill myself. Tell me how to stop doing that. So I want to talk about, I want to give a little bit of testimony as far as that's concerned. I'm going to read a few things out of the book, the big book. Everything I talk about is, and this is just my own personal life over 32 years. It takes time to connect the dots and get this thing done. You know, it just takes time. You know, we're just going to have to accept that. It takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, the getting rid of the alcohol may seem to happen overnight, but it really didn't happen overnight, did it? You got to drink, and destroy your life, and then finally, it happens in 24 hours, right? You stop drinking in 24 hours, you know? You finally get to the point where you become ready, like the sixth and seventh step. You become ready to have God come to your life and relieve you of the alcohol, and you become ready, but it takes 15 years to become ready. Well, how many years do you think it takes to become ready to get rid of the fear? When you're hanging on to, when you're drinking the fear, and you're drinking the self-pity just like you drank the alcohol. You're so used to doing it. You know, those tracks are so many, you're so used to blaming and feeling sorry for yourself and thinking that way, you know, and waiting for the other shoe to drop. How many years do you think it takes to get rid of that thinking? 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? I mean, most people come in here when they're 30, 40, 50 years old. They've been doing that kind of thinking for like 50 years. What do you think? You come in here and you put the plug in the jug and all of a sudden you think differently? You may think differently about alcohol, but that's it, you know? It takes you another 10 years to, you know, get rid of the, you know, like the resentment part and all the other stuff. You know, I mean, to really turn this battleship around. So I want to read you a couple things, and this is what I want you to focus on. The 11th step is about God. God is like very, very important. Now, I know I talk about God all the time, and I'm like a God guy, and I talk about him ad lib, but I can't impress you how important it is to have God in your life, to focus on God, to make him the center of your life. And I'm talking about God, the deity. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you whether you should be Christian, Muslim, or whatever it is. I'm not talking about good orderly direction. Okay, now, as I say that, I know there are people probably staying sober on good orderly direction. That's okay. I'm not going to put that down. You know, when you first come in here, whatever you need to adapt to get you where you got to go, you know, let me tell you something. I'm 32 years sober. I have a certain point of view right now that I've developed over 32 years with trial and error that has gotten me to a certain place in my life, which I'm going to talk to you about, which has to do with focusing on God. Okay? That's not the place I was when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Things take time to turn around. Okay? So I'm not trying to make anybody feel bad by saying you're doing it wrong if that's what's getting you through the day and stopping you from drinking. Okay? Because, you know, if you don't have the God thing down pat and you're just trying to figure this thing out and going, don't even worry about it, okay? Just lay back and listen, and, you know, you may not even understand this. It's maybe not that important. I'm just going to tell you about my testimony and my situation. Don't begin to think that 32 years sober, when I'm talking about me, is going to apply to you when you got 32 days. Apply to you in the sense that you're going to get this, because you're going to have to go through what I went through. You're going to have to go through what all alcoholics go through, the arrogance, the defiance. I'm not going to do it that way. I'm going to do it my way. You're going to have to get slammed down 50 times until you finally give up the ghost. And, you know, you're going to have to go through the struggle that I went through before you finally prove to yourself, like, you can't do it your way. You can't think this way. It doesn't work. You'll never, you're going to have to meet people in AA who have 25, 30 years where you say, where you're going to be able to see that guy is doing it completely different than me. You know, how can I have what he, you're going to have to want this thing. You're going to have to want this thing so badly. You're going to want to have to get rid of the thinking and the worry and the anxiety so badly that you're willing to give up things that you think are absolutely right. And you're willing to listen to people that you think are full of crap and actually do what they tell you to do, because you are so sick and tired of being sick and tired. You're going to have to get to that point. And I can't get you to that point with a speech. You know what I mean? You're just going to have to go through life and suffer. Live a life of quiet desperation sober. And just get to the point where you're so dissatisfied with feeling sorry for yourself and worrying every single day, where you're saying, I can't do this anymore. I got to change. You're going to have to do what I did. You're going to have to go through the stuff. You're going to have to go through the trials and the perseverance, and I understand that. But I want to read some things from the book. Now, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to suggest, you probably picked out this anyway, that you pick up. Now, since obviously I'm going to be talking about God, here's the question. How does God play into the change of thinking? And what does that have to do with the 11th step? How does a focus on God change thinking so that you change into a different person? You know, where I come from, I'm a Christian guy. We talk about you become a new creation. You actually become a new person, a new personality. The personality of God takes over your life. You know, we call it the mind of Christ, you know, takes over your life. You know, it's all, you know, most religions, I hate to say it this way, I'll probably blast for this. It's the same stuff. We just use different words. You know what I mean? It's the same. Your mind is transformed into a higher mind. You know, in AA, we say it. You know, we say this is the step that separates the men from the boys. And then it says, a well-loved clergyman says, any man who tries this enough so that he grows in the image and likeness of his creator. What do you think he means, grows in the image and likeness of his creator? Like, I changed to look like Jesus? You know? Or I changed to look like Allah or something? No! No, my mind is transformed. And you know what it says when our minds become transformed? It says in the promises, as it becomes transformed, he says, we see that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. He's transforming our minds. So that all of a sudden, instead of reacting like we always reacted with anger and fear, all of a sudden it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. Stuff that used to drive us crazy, all of a sudden it's like, you know, you're sleeping like a baby. You understand what I'm saying? And it's not because we're doing it, because we're powerless to make that change. We're powerless to make that change. It's God is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. So the question is, I probably already answered it, but I'm going to answer it even more. How does focusing on God, like the 11th step says, increasing your activity with God and focusing on God, what's the benefits of that? And the benefits of that is evoking a complete personality change so that not only are you not drinking, you're just not even thinking. Now, you may think, well, that's a horrible existence to not think. I mean, you have to think. No, you don't. No, you don't. That's one of the old ideas you got to get rid of. You got to get rid of that idea. You don't have to think. 95% of stuff you think of has absolutely nothing to do with your life, nothing to do with you, is never going to happen. The 10 things you think are going to happen, none of them are going to happen. The one thing that's going to happen is going to happen differently. You know what I mean? You have no control over it. You understand what I'm saying? And that's just the truth. You know what I mean? The only things you got to think about is things like this. I need to go to the bathroom. I'm hungry. You know what I mean? I'm tired. I mean, this is basic stuff that you don't even have to have much thinking about. You just do it. Every once in a while, you're called upon to make a decision. Red light, stop. Green light, go. You know what I mean? Other than that, now, if you just look at the basic stuff you have to do every day, and I'm a practicing lawyer. I do a lot of complex cases, and I have to think through them. But I'm talking about thinking when it involves thinking about you. I'm talking about 9% of the thinking you do about you. Because that's the problem, really, selfishness and self-centeredness. The you thinking. The worrying about you. The thinking about you. I'm an idiot. I'm stupid. What am I going to do about this? What's going to happen? I'm talking about the thinking about you, which is, I'm going to suggest, about 85 to 95% of your thinking. And it's random thoughts about you that mean absolutely nothing, and you can't even change anything with them. They're just stuff that goes on in your brain that drives you crazy, and it affects your life and what you think about yourself and how you feel about yourself and everything. And you can't stop it. Not only can't you stop it, it's like automatic. It runs by itself. The machine is run by itself. It's like perpetual motion. You want to some 90% of the time, you don't even know you're doing it. Because it's like Muzak in the elevator. It's just running over and over again. And you can't even understand what life would be like without that music. You don't even know because you haven't experienced it yet. You haven't gotten the new freedom and the new happiness yet. You know what I mean? And that's the difference between people who are just merely physically sober and people who are emotionally sober. You know, Bill Wilson talked about the next frontier, emotional sobriety. He said alcoholics are people, our real problem is unhealthy dependencies. When you're unhealthily dependent upon people, places, and things, you know what you always think about? People, places, and things. You understand what I'm saying? And then you're always scared that you're going to lose this, you're going to get that, you're going to have that, and you spend a lot of time doing what? Managing your life. By the way, you know what the big book says about that? It says you can't manage your own life. You know, or looking for somebody to manage it for you, and you know what? Nobody, there's no human path can do it. Only God could if he was sought. But you don't believe that. It says being convinced when now it said, but you don't believe that. You believe you really have to get in there and manage this thing. You know, because that's the way you've always done it. So let me read you a few things that I want you to sort of think about as I'm reading this stuff. And this is right out of the big book. You know, it's one thing to read the big book. It's one thing to think about the big book. It's another thing to start living the big book. You know, actually start doing what they're saying to do. You know what I mean? So I'm going to read these things. I want you to think about the idea of fear and how much fear plays a part in your life. You know, as a guy who sponsors a lot of people and deals with a lot of people in AA, and also as an attorney, I am constantly talking to people who are scared, which is about 99% of the people I speak to are scared out of their minds. And here's the scary part. They don't even know they're scared. They don't even admit they're scared. They'll come up to me and they'll talk to me about a problem they have. You know, I'm worried about this. I'm concerned about that. I'm thinking about this. I'm not sure about that. And I'll look at him and I'll say, oh, you're scared. He says, no, I'm not scared. I'm just worried about it. You see, they think worry is different than fear. Worry is fear. Anxiety is fear. Being concerned is fear. It's all fear. It's all fear, 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 fear. Self-centered fear. You know, the first step in getting out of jail is you got to know you're in jail in the first place. If you don't even admit that you've got fear and it's a corrosive threat and it's running your life, what shot do you have of even getting rid of it when you don't even know what the Satan is? You don't even know what the devil is. You don't even know what it is that's plaguing you. And it's taking sapping your life away. So I want you to think about what I'm reading in terms of I'm just going to take some excerpts out that I picked. Okay, first of all, you know in the big book, it says, there's a part where it says, why does them good orderly direction? Well, first of all, go with me with this, because I'm going to tell you this is what the big book says, and this is what's working in my life. The only thing that works is God. The only thing that works is God. According to the big book and according to my life, it says in the big book, it says the great fact is this and nothing less, that our whole attitudes have changed about life and God's universe. God has become the centerpiece of our life. He is the central point of our life. We begin to realize that he is miraculously working in our lives. That's what it says in the big book. You may not like it, you may not want it, but that's what it says. Later on in the book, it says this. It says, here is the how and why of it. And I'm going to read this. First of all, we had to quit playing God. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Now, you probably heard that read a million times, right? Have you ever thought of what that means? How do you play God? How does an alcoholic play God? Well, let me tell you how an alcoholic plays God. When you say you're going to just do good orderly direction, they say that good orderly, get G-O-D, good orderly. That way you don't have to rely on Jesus, you don't have to rely on Allah, you don't have to go for a deity. You can just say you're going to live a life of good order. You're going to do the next right thing. Who can argue against the next right thing? What are you going to do, the next bad thing? So that's your God. You are just going to do the next right thing. So who's making the decision as to what's the next right thing? You are. You're the one who decides what's right, what's wrong, what's the next right thing. That's another way of playing God. That's how we play God. That's a way we play God, and we make up the G-O-D, so we make believe we're actually doing this program. And that's not, you know how I know it's not the program? Because in chapter 2 of the Gnostics, it says, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago, but we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. Mm-hmm. Good, orderly direction, doing the next right thing, is a code and philosophy. You know, not drinking one day at a time is a code and a philosophy. Just say no is a code and a philosophy. As good as they sound, it's not going to keep you sober. Just say no is not going to keep you sober. You know, one day, none of this stuff is going to keep you sober. It may help for it, but on the long term, unless you develop a relationship with God, you're not going to have the power. One day, you're not going to be able to just say no. One day, you're not going to be able to not drink one day at a time. One day, you're not going to be able to do the next right thing. You're going to do the absolutely wrong thing and not be able to explain to you why. You know why? Because you have no power. Because it says in the book, lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. That means greater than ourselves. That means it can't be you. You got to keep playing God. But where and how we define the power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. That means we have written a book where we believe that it's spiritual as well as moral, and it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God. And the next line is, here the difficulty arises. Here the difficulty, because we don't want to do that. We want to manage. We're so full of fear. We want to control. We want to manage. Where's God? Who's God? Some invisible guy? I got to make the money. We want to fight that idea. You don't want to give up that idea that, you know, you got to control your life. You got to be in charge of your life. You don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. It sounds crazy to me. It sounds crazy to the people out there. It's crazy thinking. And the problem is, unless you completely embrace that thinking, you're a dead chicken. You'll never realize this deal. And that's the real problem with alcoholics. The real problem is they got to really start thinking what they think is insane and crazy and give up the fear and turn it all over to God and turn it over. And, you know, as a matter of fact, later on in the book, in chapter of the Gnostic, it says this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. We got to get rid of it. Let me read the next thing. I picked it out here. This is on page 62. Let's see if that's the next thing I want to read. And remember, I want you to focus on the words fear when they talk about fear on this deal. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear. That's 100 forms of fear. That's not like one form. It's not even 2 forms. It's not 5 forms. It's not 10. It's 100 forms. So if you start listing your fears, and you get down to 25 fears, you got 75 left to go. You're going to have fears you don't even know you have fears about. You got fears upon fears. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of others, our fellows, they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us without provocation, but we find out that we've done things because of fear in the past. If we stepped on their toes, we've done stupid things. We're going to continue to do stupid things. Because we're scared. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And an alcoholic is self-will run riot. We're willful, and with self-will, we do what we want to do. You know why? Because we're driven by fear. We're scared. You know? You try to tell me not to do that, I say, what are you, crazy? Not to send the email, what are you, crazy? Not to yell and scream, what are you, crazy? Just turn it over and let's... You know how hard it is to learn the lesson to just do nothing? I was 31 years old when I came in here. I was a trial attorney. I was division chief in the state attorney's office. I knew a lot. I was very smart. I had degrees on my walls, you know, that told me how smart I was. Do you know, I can't explain to you, next to not drinking, learning the lesson that if you don't do nothing, things will clear up by themselves was amazing to me. I think every alcoholic, you know, comes into the room and says, blah, 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 I got a call, I got a ride or something, and the sponsor says, don't do nothing. Well, you don't understand, I'm going to die. I mean, he says, don't do nothing. And you don't do nothing. The next day, it all clears up perfectly, completely, in a way that you never thought it would clear up. And you say, and all you did was like pray or something. You say, wow, this is, no, this can't be real. And then you try it again and again and again. He says, man, I'm the problem. Man, if I only knew about this not doing stuff thing, you know, and not getting involved, you know, I would have been doing this since I was 8 years old. I thought I had to get into the fight. You know, and you learn that lesson. So our troubles, we basically think of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-overwrought, right, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must get rid of this selfishness, which is about getting rid of fear. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. Not good early direction. Not doing the next right thing. God makes that possible. So if you really want to get rid of that fear and that selfishness, you're going to have to turn to him. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs, our fears. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind. You know what peace of mind is? That's a mind without fear. If you're scared, if you're worried, you don't have peace of mind. And if you're scared and you're worried and that's happened to you all the time, that's your life, then you've never had peace of mind. You may be sober, you may be picking up medallions, but you have never experienced peace of mind. The reason we drank is because it's like a substitute for peace of mind. It's trying to get peace of mind, which didn't really work. You know what I mean? Once you stop drinking, peace of mind is elusive, impossible without his help. As we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. We thought well before taking the step, making sure that we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Fear, him, abandon yourself. You know, the only way you're going to get rid of it, I mean, it's all through the book. It's all there. It's just hard to do because we just don't do it. We don't think that way. Let's go to the next one. This is on the inventory step. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties of Mrs. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. Listen, if you're an alcoholic, you're an addict, and you believe in this book, and you believe in Alcoholics Anonymous, then I'm sorry. You know, your statement, well, I don't buy that, that doesn't count. You got at some point say, my best thinking of my best day got me in here. You know, I'm going to trust what this book says, even though I don't think it's true. And you know something? It's not Russell Spatz that's saying you've got fear, and that's the corrosive threat in your life. If you believe in this program, you believe in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's this book that's saying that you're filled with fear. You know, now I know that I was filled with fear. And I can have a tendency to be filled with fear. So now I know, I used to think that I was unique, I'm different, you don't understand. I used to use that words all the time. I now know that we're all like twins. You know, if I thought something, you probably thought something. If I felt something, you probably felt something. That's why when I'm talking from the podium, or any alcoholic's talking from the podium, and just expressing himself and becoming transparent, it's such a good AAD. People are nodding their heads and going like that because you're telling what's really going on. Because we're basically, we're like the same person. We really are. We may look at, it's like I'm talking to myself here, you know? It's like there might as well be like 100 Russells in the room. You know what I mean? That's why AA works. You know? And that's a scary notion. I know. Scary. The short word. Yeah, you're laughing, but I know it's a nervous laugh. Isn't that terrible when you laugh and stuff like that? And you say, yeah, I think he's true. It's right. Scary. That's okay. That means there's 100 U's in the room. This short word somehow touches every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. They're talking about you. I mean, they're talking about me, but they're talking about you. The fabric of your existence is shot full of fear. Even though you're not drinking. As a matter of fact, especially since you're not drinking. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. You have some problems in your life you don't think you deserve. You got things going on. You got things bothering you. You know, it's coming out of yourself. But did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? There it is. Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. So now you thought you just had an alcohol problem, right? You thought you were just an alcoholic, you're a drug addict. No, you're a fearaholic. You're a fearaholic. By the way, I'm telling you something that most people in AA don't know. They don't know they're fearaholics. You know what I mean? They don't know they have that deal, you know? Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, because we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. There he is again. You think that's like an accident or a mistake? We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. In other words, crazy thing doesn't mean crazy things don't happen. It just means they happen, but you don't think about it and it doesn't bother you. How's that? We never apologize for anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. I was doing a meeting at the Little River Group, and I was talking about this stuff, the stuff I'm talking about, which is really stuff I always talk about, really. And a young girl came out of the, and you know how much I pound on the God thing, and you need the God thing, and everything like that. I mean, I pound on, it's like obnoxious, you know? I mean, I got it. And this gal comes up to me after the meeting, and she says, can I ask you a question? I said, what? She said, and you know, I'm saying, you got to make it the centerpiece of your life. You got to focus on God. I mean, the whole meeting was that stuff. And in the hopes that somebody might actually hear what I'm saying, read the book or something like that. And this gal comes up to me, nice gal, wonderful gal. And she says, well, I got to ask you one question. He says, what? She says, so what's the answer? I said, I just spent an hour talking about the answer. She said, yeah, but I didn't hear it. Well, what's the answer? How do you get rid of it? I don't see it. She didn't hear the answer. She didn't hear what I said. She sat through an hour meeting, didn't hear a word I said. Do you think it's possible to read this book, listen to this stuff, and walk away and say, yeah, but what's he talking about? That's the disease of alcoholism. That's the stuff you got to battle. That this thing is in your face, close to you, you know. In the book I read in the Bible, one of the things that Jesus says, he says, see, the kingdom of God is near you. It's right there. You got it. It's in your hand. You got it. You can have it like right now. He says, what are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, here's step 11. I want you to listen to this. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking. You know why we ask God to direct our thinking? Because our thinking is about to go into the shit can. Because we're about to think about, you know what we're about to think about? Stuff that we shouldn't think about. And that you can't help but thinking about it. But you know, there is an answer. There is an answer. You know what it says? It says there is an answer. It says God, you can't get rid of it except with his aid. So you need to ask him every morning. You ask him every day, every minute. He's got to be on your mind all the time. You know, when you're thinking about God and you're praying to God and you're focusing on God, you know what you're doing? You're not thinking about the other stuff you think about. The stuff you've been thinking about all your life. The thing you're going to continue to think about all your life. The stuff that's driving you crazy. We ask God to direct our thinking. I'm not talking about anything that's not in the big book. This isn't Russell's theory on how to stay sober. This is what the big book's saying, whether you know it or not, or whether you like it or not. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion. You're just not entitled to your facts. This is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what program you're working. People say, I'm working my program. Your program? What do you mean your program? There's only one program. There's one program. This is the program. You focus on God. You pray to God. You follow what's in this book. It says, rarely have I seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. This is their path. They wake up in the morning and they pray to God. What do you mean your program? You got a different program than that. It's not the A program. It's your program. And you're going to get out of your program when you get out of it. We consider our plans today. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that that be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these, how do you ask good orderly direction? Dear good orderly direction, divorce my... How do you ask good orderly... They're talking about God! How do you get grateful? When you're grateful, when you're supposed to have gratitude, Bill Wilson says, the Lord has been so wonderful in me, curing me of the several diseases that I keep talking about. You can only be grateful to somebody else. To have gratitude means you're grateful to something other than yourself. That's the whole essence of gratitude. That there's something outside of you that you're beholden to, you're grateful for. Correct out there, especially asking that be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. You see, you can think under those conditions. For after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives, cleared of fear. So it's not that you completely stop thinking. You just don't think about the toxic crap that you think about all the time, which is killing you. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. You know what indecision is? It's fear. Do I do this? Do I do that? What if I do this? What if I do that? In thinking about our day, we may be faced with fear. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Fear. Here we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought of decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We're often so surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. I know you don't believe it, but if you do what they say, exactly what they say in the book, trust in God, focus on God, you know, do whatever you can to be constantly focusing on Him. I don't care whether it's going to Bible study, hanging out with people that are talking about Him, reading spiritual material, but always talking about it. You'll be surprised how you will come up with the right answer all the time. And you'll be interested in how you'll come up with the wrong answer all the time if you try to take control. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still and experienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption and all sorts of observed actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will be as time passes, 32 years, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration, we come to rely on it. I've come 32 years, I rely on it. This is the way I live my life. I'm not going to tell you I've never had anxiety or it's not that, but it's a big difference between being anxious for 5 minutes, you know, once every 2 weeks, and the other crap that I used to deal with. You know, and I'm just going to take a couple of minutes to tell you a little testimony. I get to work with a lot of people. You know, I get to go to a lot of AA meetings. And so yeah, I listen to people share at AA meetings, you know, it's interesting. And I'm not putting it down because I know exactly what's going on. Because you can see the difference. I now see the difference. I used to watch these guys, you know, the old timers. And the one thing about old timers, the guys that I was attracted to, is they never, whenever they talk, they always relaxed me. It was just something about, they seemed so relaxed. They seemed so calm. I would just get calm. It was like taking a Valium. You're just being with them. They were just so calm all the time and so relaxed. And they were always, you know what I like about old timers? They were always like in the same mood. You know what I mean? They were always like in the same, and it was a good mood. You know, it was like a stable. It was like, you know, and I go to AA meetings and guys with 5, 10, 15 years, and it would be about, they'd be talking about the drama of the day. Now I'm married 32 years. I got four children. I've got son-in-laws, daughter-in-laws, six grandchildren. I've got an active law practice. I got clients. I got stuff. I got sponsor a lot of people. Everywhere I turn, there's at least five melodramas going on at the same time. And the entire world is inviting me to participate. Not to mention when I turn on the TV, you know what I mean? They're inviting me, to participate. But I come home, my wife says, you wouldn't believe what happened with your daughter. You know what happened with this, that, and the other thing? And she starts telling me her melodrama as she's watching the Mexican novellas, okay? And I mean, it's not like I can escape from this, you know what I mean? I'm a big target, I'm there, And I gotta make believe I'm listening to her, you know what I mean? Operative word, make believe, okay? And then my daughter calls me on the phone and says, I'm not talking to your mother anymore, And I'm not talking to so-and-so anymore. I got daughters and fights with wives and son-in-laws are calling me up. He says, I can't handle this. And Sponsy's calling up. I'm talking them off the ledge. I've got a world of craziness going on around me. One of my sponsors said to me, he says, Russ, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. How do you, sometimes somebody will come up to me and says, what do you think about this? What do you think about the budget? What do you think about Washington? What do you think about Obama? What do you think of this guy? And I look at him and I say, I don't. What used to happen when somebody would say to me out of the blue, what do you think about this? I start thinking, hold on, what do I think about it? I got to start thinking, what do I think about it? I start thinking about it. The more I thought about it, the more worried I'd get. Then I'd start conversing about it. And then we'd have an argument or a fight or something about it. And I'd say, I felt like I had to think about it, that it was my responsibility to think about it, And if I didn't think about it, there was something wrong with me. And it's just one more crazy thing to think about that I wasn't thinking about until this guy came up and said, what do you think about that? But I'm an alcoholic. I'm a codependent. If somebody says to me, what do you think about it? I feel I have a responsibility to think about it. And my problem is my thinking. What am I doing? I'm crazy. I ought to shoot him, Guys come up to me and says, hey, man, what do you think about the Marlins? I said, I don't. That's the end of the conversation. What do you think about that 20? I don't. I don't think about any of that. I don't think about anything. I go to parties, I'm not thinking. People are talking at parties about stuff, I can't tell you. I'm sitting there, I'm listening to music, I'm watching. I'm like the worst. I'm okay up here, but at a party, I'm not talking about it. You want to sit down and talk to me about the Bible. You want to talk to me about God. You want to talk to me about life. Even if you want to talk to me about your problems, you're asking me for help, I'm there to talk to you. I'm very poor at small talk. Because I'm not thinking small stuff. I'm not thinking the small talk stuff. You understand what I'm saying? Where my whole life was small talk. My whole life was getting involved in all these crazy things. I had no filter. There was no filter between me and everything that's going on in the outside world. The craziness of the world and what was going on in my mind, it was just like passing through. I was as crazy as this world is. Just look at how crazy this world is and tracking everything that you're looking at my mind. I couldn't block anything out. You understand? And 95% of this stuff has nothing to do with me. It is not going to happen anyway, but I couldn't block it out. There was no filter. There's no way of blocking it out. I had to be in control because I was filled with fear. Because if you don't know what's going on, something bad's going to happen. Terrible things are going to happen, And, telling people to live one day at a time, it's really out of the Sermon on the Mount. Look to this day only. It's another way of saying block out the fear of yesterday. Block out the fear of tomorrow. Just look at conscious. I used to go up to my sponsor and I'd say, I'm really worried. He says, about something. He'd say, well, how are you doing now? I said, what do you mean now? I said, well, how are you doing now? What do you mean? You mean right now? He says, yeah, right now. I said, you mean right this second? He says, yeah, right this second. You mean right here talking to you at the sunset? Like, yeah. How are you doing right now? You mean right here, right now? He says, yeah, right here, right now. He says, well, right now, I'm okay. He'd say, there you go. And he'd walk away. That only took 10 years to figure out. So what I'm saying is this. This is not a concept. I'm just telling you about my life now. My life is now, sometimes I got to tell you something. I'll tell you how devilish this disease is. I walk around on the planet with all this stuff going on around me, craziness going on around me. I remember I told this story about Al Kennedy, who was dying of cancer and it didn't seem to bother him. I said, how do you do that? I know how you do that now. I know how you do that. I've had cancer 3 or 4 times. I know how you do that. You just don't think about stuff that it's none of your business. It's none of my business. If I have cancer, I have cancer. If I die, I die. I mean, it's none of my business. I just do what I do. You know, I just got, you know, I thinking about it ain't going to make it go away. I think about God may help it. I think I prefer to think about God. I can think about the cancer. I can think about God. I prefer to think about God. It seems to work for me. You know what I mean? I mean, I can think about money. I prefer to think about God. You know, I mean, I mean, that's how, sometimes I sit around, this is real alcoholic thinking, when you're actually feeling good most of the time, no matter what's going on, and you start thinking to yourself, here's an alcoholic thought, there must be something wrong with me. I should be more worried than I am. Everybody else is worried, and I'm not worried. Maybe there's something wrong with me. And every once in a while that goes through my mind. Maybe there's something wrong. Maybe you're in denial, Russell. You know, maybe you shouldn't feel so good. And then wellness catches up with me. I say, nah, you're okay. Forget it. You know, I'd rather be this way than that way. You know what I mean? And what does it come from? This is all coming from the 11th step, from getting closer to him, because he's the one who has the power to transform your mind so you can filter. It's because of that stuff you can filter out. It even says in the back of the book, you know what it says? It says, see to it, your relationship with him is right. Great events will happen to you. It says he will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. You know what happens? You start thinking about him. You start focusing on him. You know what happens? Automatically, you will attract and be attracted to people who are thinking and talking about him. And it will help you even think. And you know what else will happen? You will automatically stay away from and deflect people that are talking about the crap that is driving you crazy. Some guy will come up to you and say, what do you think about this? What do you think about her? And you'll know automatically, stay away from that person. I don't want to deal with her. And all of a sudden, you'll find yourself dealing with people that are not basement people. They're balcony people. They're lifting you up, and you'll start feeling better, and you'll stay away from, because, you know, as alcoholics, the one thing we do is we're the ones that run into the burning buildings. We pick the worst people to hang out with and call them our best friends, giving us all sorts of crappy information to think about. You know, your best friends tell you stuff, and you walk away, and you're going nuts because some gal says, you wouldn't believe what Sally said to you about the party, and they're driving you nuts, and you think it is your friend. You're gossiping with this person who's driving you nuts, and because we crave attention, we crave all that stuff. You know what I mean? It's God that cures that deal. And we're powerless over getting away from that stuff because that's the way we naturally think. And that's just as much alcoholism. That's the ism, you know what I mean, than drinking. And that's what you're going to be suffering from, you know, once you're in here and you stop drinking, that's what you're going to be dealing with for the next 20, 30 years. But I just want to say this one thing. I remember when I was 10 years sober, and I knew there were guys that had some sort of escape philosophy. I knew there was a different way of doing this. I had met these guys, and I was 10 years sober, working this thing, doing step series, doing, you know, sponsoring guys. And something happened, I can't remember what it was, and once again I was in the crapper. Once again it was 3 o'clock in the morning. Once again I couldn't get this fear out of my mind. Once again I was alone. Once again nobody would understand. Once again my life was going to be over. 10 years sober, you know what I mean? On and on and on. I remember saying to myself, man, this is never going to end. This is now. I'm doing the best job I can, the best job it is, and I'm a basket case still. Will this ever end? When am I going to know that for you? And I, you know, I really thought it was like the drinking, that this will never end. And I just want you to know, it doesn't have to be that way. I want you to know there's an end to that deal. This is not for the rest of your life, unless you want it to be that way. There is an end. So thank you. God bless you.
Thank you, Rob.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.